This podcast contains some coarse language.
Move to Owen Sound, man. Best fries in the O. Greg Wyshynski, that is an actual comment that our producer Sam McKee made to me just before the program. And this is the context for it. It got a little play on Twitter too, so I'll fill out the conversation. We were talking. How's it going, bud? We were talking about Merrick post career. You know, what it's all done for me. Like, uh-huh. I'm just gonna move to a junior hockey town and just work for like nothing, zero money, and just do junior games. And his default is move to Owen Sound, man. Best fries in the O.
You know, first of all, I didn't even know there was a competition. I thought it was just well known that Owen Sound had the best fries. I mean, you don't go to anywhere else in the OHL to get fries, as far as I know.
Apparently,
but secondly,
Harry Lumley Bayshore Arena. Am I right about that, Sam? The Harry Lumley Bayshore.
Your vision for your post major broadcasting career is actually kind of nice. Like, it's almost like when I think about how wonderful it would be one day to like run a small community paper.
Yeah.
Not because it's any virtue in the world of journalism or anything where I'm like, oh, I need to do this, you know, for the good of the industry or whatever.
Yep.
But because everyone will kiss your ass. Like, you'd be like, you'd be like the Joseph Randolph Hearst of like Owen Sound. But in your case, you'd be like the Don Cherry of Owen Sound. Everybody would be, or the Ron McLean of Owen Sound.
I always kind of want to be around the game. Like, I would probably just stay in Stouffville and do Stouffville Spirit games. That would be the big, I went to the home. By the way, big home opener win, 5-4 in overtime against the Pickering Panthers on Saturday. Stouffville Spirit out to a 1-0 start. Well done, boys. Even with a couple other key players.
This would take a lot more money than either of us have. But let's make a promise on the air right now that if either of us win the lottery, does Canada have a lottery?
Yes, we do, but most of it goes back to the government. But
all right, well, if you were to win on one of your crazy legalized sports gambling games, or if I win Powerball, let's me and you do a Levy and Melrose and buy a minor league team.
Oh, man, it's a great way to lose money, and I would do it in a flash.
I would do it in a heartbeat. Well, listen, the other alternative is me buying a restaurant, which, again, is just
here's a
giant bonfire of dollars. Like, let's buy a minor league hockey team and make it in our own image, like Bret Hart.
The Calgary Hitmen?
Yes.
Junior hockey teams are expensive now, though, but like once upon a time, it's like, yeah, you take your tip money and
buy a team. You see, that's your problem. You're thinking very linear. You're thinking we're going to buy a junior hockey team. We are not going to buy a junior hockey team.
Oh, no?
We bought like a Southern Professional Hockey League team or an ECHL team. Yeah,
still a big money pit.
Sure, it'd be a huge money pit. They're always moving, but there's always somebody that'll buy it from you to move it someplace, right? No, I don't care about that. Like, this would be if we had money to burn. Maybe we kick some to charity to feel good about ourselves, but the rest of it would go into this money pit of a team, and we would co-own it.
Stouffville Spirit. Come on, bud.
You'd be
Stouffville Spirit. Spend your U.S., your beautiful, lovely, luxurious, juicy U.S. dollars up here.
You'd be director of player personnel and team president. Yeah. I would be
game ops.
Game ops and ambassador of fun, like Brett Hull was.
That was a great title. I forgot about that.
And then we hire Doug McLean to coach. Be coach GM.
Oh, scream at the kids. Oh, he'd be good. Scream at the kids.
Oh, I would love that. That would be a fun thing to do. All right, so that's a personal promise from us to you, the listener, that if either of us ever have a financial windfall of any kind, preferably in U.S. dollars, that we'll buy a team together.
And I would love it if – oh, by the way, I should have sent Nate Ewell a text on this, but I'll do it publicly in case he's listening. So you know what? One of the highlights – well, we took the kids, right, to the game on Saturday, the home opener at Stouffville. You know what the highlight was? Do you know what Chuck-a-Puck is?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, I did Chuck a Puck for the first time at a what the hell? I think they're called the Lehigh Valley Phantoms now.
Yeah, you did Chuck a Puck there. Yeah.
Yeah. So, tell me what your experience with that was, and I'll tell you what my experience.
Well, I've done it a number of times, and I've always lost. Now, Chuck a Puck, if you don't know what it is, Chuck a Puck is an intermission feature. So once the Zamboni has flooded the ice, before the game, you buy like, you know, three pucks for $5. And each puck has a number on it, and you throw the pucks on the ice, and whichever puck is closest to center wins. And it can be, you know, a prize, it can be money, it can be whatever. So you ready for this? Greg, I've done this so many times in my life. Guess who won Chuck-a-Puck on Saturday?
You did?
My six-year-old son.
Oh, your six-year-old
one? He got it right on the freaking button.
All right, now hold on.
Hang on. So here's my question. Here's my question. This is at a Stouffville Spirit game, okay? So this is the OJHL. Okay, uh-huh. So it's not the OHL, so you're not mixing with players with pro contracts.
The OJHL.
Ontario Junior Hockey League.
Tagline, it's murder. Oh, wait.
No. Oh, that's good, though. That's not bad. New marketing campaign. Let's see, talk to Kenny Burrows and see if we can get that through. So here's my question.
If the skates don't fit, you must quit.
And these gloves don't fit. What's going on? That's hilarious.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay.
Sorry.
So here's my question to Nate Ewell. Okay? Uh-huh. So the OJHL, much like the BCHL, you know, the SJ, all these other leagues, where players want to maintain their NCAA eligibility. Mm-hmm. So my six-year-old son, he's a pretty good hockey player.
Oh, yeah.
You've seen him play.
Draft year?
2028.
There it is.
Not that I'm counting.
Right.
So he wins Chuck-a-Puck, and the prize is $20. They walk up the table, and he gets an envelope. He's like, what's it? He said it was like a gift certificate for Boston Pizza or for Tim Hortons or something. And it's $20 cash, mm-hmm. $20. Mm-hmm. And $20 to a six-year-old, holy smokes, he's won the lottery. Speaking of lotteries, that's Powerball for him. And my question now is to Nate Ewell, considering he took money from an OJHL team, does that kill his NCAA eligibility? Is he now no longer able to play NCAA hockey should one day he get a scholarship?
As you know, I am in fact shut up. I am in fact have a background in athletics and legalities.
About okay.
Athletics, yes.
Very good.
And here is my answer to you based on what I know about the law and the applicable law. Okay. Now, Chuck-a-Puck is in essence a fundraising activity, correct?
Yeah, I think it goes into the Stouffville Spirit / Kenny Burrows Benevolent
right.
Fund.
So it's like a 50-50 almost. You spend money on the puck goes to charity.
Yeah, it's a multi-weighty.
Right, but you also get some money back, right?
Yeah.
If you win.
Yeah.
So to me, this is a charitable endeavor. And it's not him getting a payment of any kind or him being on the payroll or mm-hmm. or drawing a salary or even getting money for any sort of endorsement. This is a part of a charitable endeavor, and I think when it comes to gifts of charity, the NCAA would smile upon it.
Hmm, interesting. Although I think in the back of my mind, somewhere, you know, when TJ's of the age to play college hockey, if he chooses to go that route, and Red Berenson will still be coaching the University of Michigan, by the way, that if he ends up going to North Dakota or BU or something like that, that one of the other schools will save this podcast and this admission and enter it as evidence in order to disqualify him from Division I competition. Because all the way back in 2016, he took $20 from the Stouffville Spirit.
I think it really depends on how good he is. Not only for the school that's bringing him on,
right,
but also for the schools that may be giving this podcast a spin down the road.
Well, I mean, by that
I mean they'll have plugged a chip into their outlet in the back of their heads,
yeah,
and getting the podcast directly beamed into their brain.
Well, you know,
be Matrix people.
Stouffville
by then,
right? Does graduate some high end talent. We think of Drake Kajula from North Dakota, who signed with the Edmonton Oilers in this off season. He's the latest export.
True story. Always just assumed his name was Caligula. Never really paid too much
like
attention.
It. Great name.
I always just look. It's one of those things I look at and I'm like, in my mind, I'll never have to say this name out loud, but now I probably will.
Yeah.
And I just would go Drake Caligula in my mind.
For the longest time. Okay, so I got an admission to make here. For the longest time on this podcast, when he first joined the National Hockey League, I don't know if you ever noticed this. I can't believe I'm telling you this. I would do this deliberately to you. I would always try to draw the conversation towards the Philadelphia Flyers just so I could hear you say Gostisbehere.
Just Shane Gus has got to be here.
That's right. It's no matter what you mentioned, I would always try to take it to the Philadelphia Flyers just so I could hear you mangle the defenseman's name.
And what was amazing is that, like, it was before last season. It was before his rookie season, because he was always on the radar as the guy that was coming up, and I'd look at it and I would just dread it. I was just like, please,
don't make the NHL.
Yeah, I don't want to wish injury on anybody. Maybe just go play in Sweden for a few years, but just like, let's avoid me having to deal with this name.
But hey, this Kelly Johnson kid. Oh yeah, he's outstanding.
All I'm saying is that it's not that every night for our minor league team would be Star Wars night. Most nights it'd be Star Wars night.
Speaking of minor league operations, speaking of kids hockey, where are you right now?
All right, so as you can hear the ambient noise around me, I'm in Verizon Center tonight as we do this podcast. It's a USA versus Finland World Cup of Hockey exhibition game. Right now on the ice is a youth hockey game because, I don't know if you know, but there aren't a whole hell of a lot of available sheets here in D.C., so it's very nice that they allow some kids to play here, I suppose, when there's ice on the instead of a parquet court for the Wizards or the Mystics. So that's what you hear now is a bunch of kids playing some youth hockey as we do the podcast. It's late afternoon. Today I spent time with Team Europe and Team Sweden, which was delightful.
And what were your takeaways? A lot of takeaways from Team Europe. There you go. Fill in this obvious hockey joke there.
I have two takeaways, because one is a story I'm working on about Louis Eriksson and the Sedins and how well that's working and how...
Are they really calling them the triplets?
The coach referred to them as the triplets.
Awesome. Okay. Yeah.
And you know, obviously could be the only thing worth a damn when it comes to Vancouver this year. But it was funny. Both the Sedins... And I told them apart because I was talking to Daniel, and then I drew a small black mark on his back with a marker, like Michael Scott in The Office, to tell the twins apart.
That's good.
They both use the same comparison to Louis Eriksson insofar as a player they used to play with and his skill set compared to Louis Eriksson's. Which player do you believe they both spoke of, a former line mate of theirs that they find comparable to Louis Eriksson?
Alex Burrows.
That's correct, and I almost chuckled. I mean, like, obviously from a hockey perspective, this is a pretty good comparison. But yet, when you think of Louis Eriksson,
the name,
and you think of
Alex Burrows, doesn't really come up.
It's a bit of a yin and a yang. It's a bit of a light in the dark. It's
okay,
a bit of
vanilla
and jalapeno chocolate.
Okay, let me tell you this. So, last week on Hockey Central, we talked to Henrik Sedin, and I asked him point blank. I said, you've had revolving door of right-wingers in your entire career. It kind of reads like a who's who of the right side from the Vancouver Canucks for 15-odd years. What kind of player do you want playing wing with you? Like, what is a type of player? And he said, you know, generally people think it's like a crash and bang and get dirty kind of guy. And essentially he just said, I can crystallize it. We just need someone that can think like us. And he said, one of the best was Alex Burrows, who could think the same way that we can think. I mean, it's instinctual between Henrik and Daniel. Yeah. So I'm sure that what they were getting at was not so much the antics out of Alex Burrows, but more, you know, brains that are more a symbiote with two of the more freakish and outstanding hockey players the game's ever seen.
And what I found interesting about, because I asked Louis about that, about, you know, do you ever feel like the third wheel out there watching these two do their thing? Because, I mean, they're obviously on a different wavelength than most people are, able to just kind of, you know, find each other with passes without even looking. I'm like, do you ever feel like the third wheel out there? And he said something interesting. He said, it's not only just you play with them and you realize that you kind of see the game the same way. He said, having played against them so many times, you also get a sense of their tendencies. And kind of know what they're going to do as well. So I found that to be real. It's a good conversation. It'll make for a better story than it does a podcast. But the other thing, though, did you have something else to say?
No, I'm just going to say one of the reasons I like these guys so much is that, you know, they don't skate because they can't a million miles an hour. They slow the game down, and they're one of the rare duos that actually can effectively play east-west in a game that's going as fast as it's going right now, where everybody's just skating north-south.
Yeah, and sometimes east-west in a 4 or 5 foot radius against the boards.
It's remarkable, isn't it?
It's so remarkable. To watch them cycle like the Sedins has become sort of like a cliche. Yeah. You know, there's a blog named after, for God's sakes. But it's beautiful. It's so beautiful to watch them do their thing in the offensive zone. And even now at this advanced age, they're still able to take control of a game. And all of a sudden you look up and they've had, you know, puck possession for a minute and a half in the attacking zone. It's so cool. Sweden. So let me ask you this. If Canada was let me rephrase this question.
Okay.
Let's say that everybody on Canada is cloned. Okay. So they still exist in the national. There's a Jonathan Toews on Chicago,
right.
But there's also Jonathan Toews on Team Canada. You know what I'm saying?
Okay,
Same person.
Same guy.
But just two of them.
Gotcha.
Now, Canada, as currently constituted for the World Cup, would win the President's Trophy and probably the Stanley Cup, yes?
They're the safest bet, yeah.
Sweden would probably, absent Canada's existence, Sweden, same question, would probably win the President's Trophy and the Stanley Cup, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. Is there any other team in this World Cup that you could say that for? The Americans? As constituted for this World Cup, I don't believe so.
It's funny because as constituted for this World Cup, I like them better as a playoff NHL team than I do a short tournament team.
Okay, so maybe them. Finland.
No.
And not Russia.
Just
and
Canada.
Not the Czechs.
Just Canada
and Sweden and maybe the
but
U.S.
But see, Sweden's fascinating to me because if I'm Sweden and you know I'm playing against the elite teams in this tournament. Of all teams you could look at, because a lot of hockey's like this in the NHL too, as opposed to just going, go hockey for 60 minutes, mm-hmm. isn't Sweden a team that you look at and you say to yourself, from a strategic point of view, shouldn't the goal for Sweden be play 50-50, 5-on-5, and take your chances on your power play? Because that's where you can kill teams, because you're that good. Just play a 50-50 game 5-on-5.
With Carlson and OEL and
all of it,
yeah. No, you might be right, but then also knowing that no matter what the other team has on the back end, you're going to be able to match it with Henrik.
Yeah,
in theory, I mean, we keep saying this, but he's not been Henrik in the last couple of years. But we'll see.
I'll still take my chances at Henrik Lundqvist.
Well, yeah, even then, I mean, like
I'll still.
I think so too. Now, the only thing, I guess they have Hornqvist, and then who would be your other sort of, because the one thing about this Sweden team that I kind of miss was having Holmström and having Franzen as your two Hasses. You got Hornqvist, and that I don't know who your other guy is that's like that kind of player on this roster.
Do you need it, though?
Nah, you might not. But if you're going to play a special teams game, it's good to have that guy. And I guess Hornqvist could be that guy.
Hornqvist is that guy. He dines out in front of the net. That's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why they got him. That's why they gave up. I mean, a significant piece in James Neal. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, he's there to stand in front of the net. That's cool.
Yeah, I like the Sweden team a lot, and they're fun to be around too. I was talking to Patrick Berglund about that, and he's like. What's it like coming to this team? And he's like, the Swedes are wonderful, nice people. Wouldn't you want to come to this team?
But that's the thing, too. Like, go back in the history of the game, okay, since the Swedes started arriving in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Tell me all the Swedes that were a headache, that were a problem. I'll wait.
Was Ulf ever a problem?
No.
Or was he just a problem to other players?
To Cam Neely, he was.
Yeah.
Cam Neely still wants to claw his eyes out.
I'm trying to think.
Like a real headache? Oh, we got to get the... Like, how many times have you ever said, we got to get the Swede out of the room? He's been a problem.
Swedes are kind of what you... Swedes are kind of what you'd expect Canadians to be.
That's what Canada thinks it is.
That's what Canada thinks it is. Right, exactly. The other thing here... two things about the World Cup. We got a cool guest coming up, too.
Yeah.
In a second or about 10 minutes to talk about... Ice Guardians?
Ice Guardians, yeah. Adam Scurgy, the producer.
Adam Scurgy.
Who's also done documentaries on weed. Wow, how'd you ever end up on this podcast, Adam?
Yeah, crazy, right?
Yeah,
two things about the World Cup. First of all, I get the sense in talking to all the players that although we look on paper and see all of these incredible goalies in this tournament and think it's going to be a goalies tournament, the players really believe that it's not. The players really believe that the goalies are going to have rust on them, and the defenses are going to have rust on them. It's not going to be easy to teach systems and get in that mindset this quickly.
Yeah.
I get the sense they think it's going to be a bit more high scoring than we all think it is.
So why don't players have rust? So shooter's timing is perfect. But the defensemen will be rusty and the goalies will be rusty.
No, I don't.
You just talked to forwards today?
But dude, you know, what is one of the mantras you've had on this show for forever? It's that sloppy hockey produces goals,
yeah.
Right?
Oh, okay, I see what you mean. Oh, because of defensive breakdowns.
Okay. guys that you know.
I hope it is. I hope it's sloppy. I hope it's really sloppy.
The conditioning for these guys is going to be so varied across the board, even in the same five guys on the ice. I'm just telling you what's been told to me. I feel like we all go into this thing thinking it's going to be, you know, Carey Price, Jonathan Quick, Henrik Lundqvist, and a cloud of dust, and it ain't necessarily going to be like that, at least what they're thinking. But we'll see what happens. The other thing is I spent some time with Team Europe today.
Who's Team Europe?
Well, that's the, you know, Team Hodgepodge, Team Dollar Store Bin. And here's the thing that I...
Poor Thomas Grice. Yeah. Would you hang any of those goals on him?
No.
Not a single one. Mm-mm. Okay, sorry, go ahead. But yeah, poor Grice. Jeez.
I know there's a lot of people that look at Team Europe and the U23s and you get mad at it because it's not your World Cup if these two teams exist. But I got to tell you, man, like, I talked to Zuccarello today a little bit. I talked to Kopitar a little bit. And although I fundamentally disagree with the idea that the Swiss aren't here, because I think that's a hockey nation that, one, has earned the shot, and, two, would benefit greatly from the shot of a World Cup stage.
Czech Republic, probably, too.
Yeah, you could make the argument, although, you know, they're a different looking team without Krejci, without Hurdle, and without, I mean, you know, they still have the Czechs aren't Slovakia yet. Slovakia didn't belong in the World Cup. They're in a real downward trajectory as a hockey nation right now, and it sucks, but it's true. But the Swiss should be here, but at the same time, like, I'm talking to Zuccarello, I'm talking to Kopitar, I'm like, yeah, it's good that they're here. It's good that these guys, it may not be a pretty team to watch, and they might not gain a point in the standings in their group, but at least you get to see Zuccarello do something fun in this tournament. At least you get to see Kopitar in this tournament, and that's a cool thing.
That's the question you ask yourself. Okay, so you look at Team Europe and you say to yourself, you know, it's a mutt. Oh, it's players from all over. It's a ragtag team. But, you know, generally, they're all NHL names. They're all NHL players. Would you rather watch a game with this collection of hockey players or... would you rather watch, I don't know, pick a team, Latvia, with all due respect, you get starched by the U.S.?
But at the same time, like, as much as I want to dismiss Team Europe because they played horribly and it's hard to imagine this team coming together, there is something to be said for the adults in that room. Like, if you walk into a room and your power structure is Zdeno Chara, Andrzej Kopitar, and Marian Hossa...
Okay.
Like, that's a pretty damn good starting point
for something. I know it's just exhibition games. I know it's beginning of the season. Chara looks old, dude.
Yeah, I know.
Chara looks really old.
Still, that said, I think Team Europe's got a better defense than the Czechs do. Effing Michael Jordan is on their third pairing.
Yeah, but you got Chara who's having a hard time moving. Lucas Pisa's problems are well noted. Christian Ehrhoff. Oh, I don't know, man. And they're all left-hand shots. Damn it. How are you going to win when everyone's a left-hand shot?
Oh, I don't know. Thank you, Team Canada, ladies and gentlemen. Team Canada here.
Wait a minute. The Detroit Red Wings won Stanley Cups with that. Never mind. Ignore me. I'll just shut up.
So I have a soft spot in my heart for Team Europe for just the sheer wackiness of it. And, like, I talked to Hossa a little bit. By the way, his foot's okay.
Good.
He acknowledged the fact that he scared the living crap out of Chicago earlier this tournament.
Oh. Chicago fans started hating on this tournament fast.
Yeah, oh, real
quick. By the way, shout out to whoever it was. We mentioned it on the podcast. Is there going to be a World Cup body count Twitter feed? And there is now.
Oh,
whoever
nice.
Whoever you are, shout out to you. Well done.
I wonder whether or not these – there's a few ways you can approach the motivation angle when it comes to Team Europe. The first is that you know, you never want to be eliminated from a tournament. So you're going to play hard to try to beat the U.S. and beat Canada. That's expected. The chip on the shoulder thing, Ralph Krueger kind of downplayed that idea that there's that aspect of it for the Swiss and the Slovaks. But the one thing I find interesting is just I was talking to Hossa, and like, you could tell that he's intrigued by this. Like, it's a challenge. You know, the Blackhawks are going to be great, and he's done well internationally before and all this other jive, but, like, can we pull this off? Like, this is unprecedented to throw this assemblage of talent in the same room and say, go make something out of it. Everybody else has played with each other before, you know, more than two or three guys in the room together. Yeah. So I'm interested to find out if they accept the challenge of, yeah, no one gives us a shot in this thing, and we're going to make it work.
One of the problems is, and listen, lines are hard to put together internationally, but there aren't really any pairs
Mm-mm.
for Europe. That's one of the issues.
That's a real problem.
Real distinct players that don't play as pairs.
Yep.
At all. That's the first thing you flag, other than the blue line, which, you know, you and I may differ. I mean, tough not to love Roman Josi, but after that,
I still take him over the Czechs.
I know.
Roman Polak and what's his face? Sakara, I think, right?
Andre Schuster plays on that team. You got Zbanek Mikhalik. Knock Liddell, who, by the way, sneaky, was outstanding when he got called up by Calgary last year. He was real good. Kempny, Kondratek. I see your point.
Thank you. But they have something that Europe doesn't have, which is I think Mrazek can win a game on his own. And I think Neuwirth can, too. I'm not convinced Halak or Grice can.
Not with that defense. Yeah, that's fair.
I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think there is a chance that if Mrazek or Neuwirth plays out of their minds, that the U.S. might not make the semifinals.
Okay, they've been getting destroyed by Team North America in two games. The last game was, it was the turning point was the opening faceoff.
That's exhibition,
though. I know, hang on. It's exhibition.
Because, nothing else in this tournament is exhibition, just the exhibition games.
It's all exhibition. Team North America, would it surprise you if, much like Team Europe, they didn't win a single game in the tournament?
Yes.
Who are they going to beat? Sweden? No. Finland? No.
Maybe.
Russia is the only maybe for me. For Team
and that game would be like 8-7.
I think so, too. That'd be fun. You want to talk about your sloppy hockey? North America, Russia. That could be it. It wouldn't shock me if they go bagel. Same as Team Europe.
I think they could beat Finland.
I don't know. Man. I know they've had a really easy time getting the puck out of their own zone. I don't know that Finland.
I know
them all,
it's all structure
all that space around
and
the blue lines.
I know.
I can't see that happening.
I know. That'd be interesting. That's gonna be fun to see. All right. Before we get to our guests, maybe we should probably start the show. And so I'm gonna rag this for a second and listen to the announcer announce something.
Yeah.
Madison or Austin just scored a goal. Congratulations to them. And with that. Let's start the show proper, shall we?
Jeff Merrick of Sportsnet.
So there has to be a standard version of red and blue. What is the actual shade of colors of the red and blue lines in the NHL?
Greg Wyshynski of Yahoo Sports.
Why don't they sell that specific shade labeled blue line blue and red line
NHL
red
blue
for hockey fans?
Debate hockey, pop culture, and more hockey. Merrick versus Wyshynski.
Listen, you silly bastards.
Yo.
Thursday, September 15th, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m., 918 Bathurst in Toronto. Me and Jeffy, live podcast, previewing the whole shebang of the World Cup. Taking your questions, probably reading some Esposito, and of course a game show exclusively for the people inside.
Will it be a World Cup themed game show?
It might be. I don't want to blow up our spot, but it might be. 918 Bathurst, you can visit homestandsports.com for more information. It is Puck Talks. It's not just me and Merrick, by the way. I don't know why you'd not want to go. You clearly like us if you're listening to the podcast. But it's also Ken Reed, and it's also Joe Pack, and it's also General Fanager, and it's also Kristen Shilton, and it's also, of course, Chris Johnston and Steve Dangle and Andy Petrello and a cast of billions, along with me and Merrick in a live podcast.
There's a lot. I want to meet Vesa Rantanen and Magnus Nyström, Finnish and Swedish hockey writers.
Mm-hmm.
That should be pretty cool.
Learn you a thing or two about the World Cup. But it's going to be a big old World Cup kickoff party Thursday night.
You know what's a drag, too? I was talking to our buddy Uffe Bodine, who writes for Hockey Sphere. He's coming in to town day after.
Oh.
I know, just going to miss it by a day. Awesome dude. He came down to our event in Buffalo. Great guy. So we're just going to miss him by a day for Puck Talks.
Indeed. But yeah, do check it out. Tickets are selling well, but are still available. So give it a look. Come say hi. It's always a really fun time. There's beer. There's good times. And then, of course, there's the inevitable after party, I'm sure, with one of us. Not saying who.
I'll stay.
Probably me. Oh, you'll stay?
I'll stay.
All right. So there you go.
There's usually a lineup of people that want to be bored by me.
If you
and
come
I
down
am in the
to
business
the show,
of boring people.
If you come down to the show, there will be an after party. That's our vow.
All right.
That's our vow right there. Yeah. So there you go. And also on Puck Daddy currently, I should pimp this out, World Cup of Hockey previews and also NHL previews as well. Got that rolling as well. We do one a day until the start of the season. Mm-hmm. Not our fault they decided to have a giant international hockey tournament. Right, we're dropping our Arizona Coyotes preview. But such is life. Life goes on.
That's okay. I mean, listen, I'd rather watch this tournament than a bunch of guys on PTOs skate around, try to get a gig, knowing full well they're only there to fill the have played in the NHL quota for exhibition games.
And it really is a bunch of guys.
Feel bad for those dudes. Okay, let's bring on our next guest. He is an outstanding producer, a bon vivant, a man about town, and someone who is a proud Colonian. I think that's how you might say it. He's from Kelowna. He is Adam Scourgie. He is a producer of Ice Guardians, which had its world premiere yesterday in Toronto. Also, other documentaries include The Union, The Business of Getting High, and Culture High. Adam Scourgie, however, considering you have a background in both marijuana and hockey, however did you end up on this podcast? How's it going, Adam? Good to talk to you.
It's going great. I'm just coming down from the amazing high of last night at really Ice Guardians. That was for me, like a dream come true premiere. It was truly amazing. So forgive my voice too. It's pretty raspy. I've been talking a lot the last couple of days.
No worries, man.
He was. I'm telling you, man. Scourgie was like horned up large yesterday.
I've been four days.
I turn on the radio, he's there. I turn on the TV, he's there. I open up the fridge, he jumps out at me. I'm like, geez, man, I thought I was bad. Adam's even worse. Hey, home run, by the way, on this thing. I saw the preview, but didn't get a chance to watch the entire thing. I had Colby Armstrong, who saw it in Saskatoon at the Sneak, texting me some great things about it. But I wanted to make sure that I just saw it for the first time in the theater with all the guys, with you there as well, with a few hundred people around at the film festival. So that was, you know, the bulletproof home run, the bulletproof win-win. That was an outstanding documentary. You have to take a lot of pride in what you did.
Thank you, Jeff. We're, really proud of it, and thank you for participating in it too. I mean, I told you before when we were texting, when you hadn't seen it yet, that you crushed it in there, and I wasn't blowing smoke up your ass. We couldn't be more proud, and as you saw last night, seeing the reactions from the guys, because ultimately we wanted to honor their story and their place in hockey history, so hearing them so excited about it and finally something that told their story right was just really a dream come true.
Well, I'm glad someone's not blowing smoke up Merrick's ass. That means the list. We got one on the list now. Adam, what was the, for those who don't know, what was the inspiration for making Ice Guardians?
So I went to school with Scott Parker and Todd Fedoric, who both became like good personal friends, and really saw them climb through the ranks of the WHL to make their NHL dreams come true. And, you know, I saw their persona on the ice. Now everybody thought they were just like ruthless savages that didn't belong in the game. But then I got to know them personally. And I mean, they're both unreal guys, and they're that fighting and what they did is what brought me back to hockey. I'd moved overseas to Singapore and Australia, and I didn't watch hockey anymore. I didn't play it. I didn't care about the sport. And it was really that enforcer role and the fighting and what they brought to their team that really got me inspired back into hockey. And then I loved all aspects of the game, but it was really their role and them as people that brought me back to the game to love everything about hockey. So then, you know, as filmmakers do, I met up with my director, Brett Harvey, and we looked at what else had been done out there. And great docs are always very politically driven, too. And the argument of violence in sports and fighting in hockey is one that every year becomes a big debate. So we looked at it and looked at other films that have been done, and there had been nothing that really spoke from the player side. Previous docs that we looked at had often a narrative by the producers that they wanted to push. So we wanted to just ask the guys. And that was something that was so nice of, you know, Fedoruk to say last night. He's like, you know, in the last 10 years, there's been a lot of people writing about me and my role and who I am and what I should do. He's like, so I was super happy to see this, where finally you can hear it from me. Don't write it for me. Let me tell you. You know, so even one of the questions, you know, that was in with most of the guys that director Brett Harvey had in there was that, you know, hey, what do you want people to know from your story of an enforcer? And they were taken back. They're like, wow, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that, right? What would you like people to know about your role? So really, I'm coming off this high of the world premiere last night. So it's really was a dream come true to see these guys so excited about it and, you know, praising it and texting me today. And then a few of the players that came that didn't get in it, that are jealous that they're not in it, that's always a good sign, too.
Although some of them do make cameos in some of the fight scenes.
That's what I said. Just about in the fight scenes, we got just about everybody, right? So we got just about everybody. We did what we could to try to honor everyone.
How tough was it to get, I mean, a lot of some of the interesting stuff was, you know, you're in England with Kevin Westgar, so some of that footage is pretty compelling. In San Diego with the Gulls, with Brian McGrattan. Was it tough to secure any of the other footage?
Oh, that was 6 years of the 8 year battle, was how do we get footage and how do we get the rights to do this and learning and navigating how to do that. And then also getting the trust of the guys, right? Because often, you know, with this polarized argument of fighting and hockey, a lot of the guys don't want to talk, right? They weren't eager to jump on board and be like, oh, great, somebody else saying I'm a big dummy that doesn't belong here. So the nice thing we did, and this is kind of that unexpected blessing when you have a journey that takes this long, because this doc from concept to delivery took 8 years, but we built great relationships and we've made a sizzle reel, which I think I originally sent to you too, Jeff, that, you know, to show people what we were trying to do, and the players leaked it a few years ago. So when we reached out to a lot of these guys like Westy was like, dude, I watched your sizzle reel and I loved it. I was waiting for you to reach out to me. Yes, you can come film me. So it made it easier that we had this kind of rapport with the guys that they were saying, hey, they're finally asking what's our story and what do we want to say? So you should do an interview if you can. So that really is what opened the door. And then, Jeff, as you know, the hockey world, once you're in that circle, then we had an army. And then once Kelly Chase came on as a producer, then, like, just everybody was agreeing to do interviews.
So, Adam, I know one of the things about the doc, like you've said before in other interviews, is that it's sort of an exploration of how far people will go to follow their dreams. It's it's doing what needs to be done to make a career for yourself. I mean, it's no secret that a lot of these guys don't get into hockey, thinking I'm just going to get pummeled every night, but that's their entry point to eventually making the NHL. So, with all that established, how do you feel about something like the concussion lawsuit, where you have former enforcers coming back and saying, I wasn't aware of the risks, I wasn't aware of this or that and the other thing, and suing the league retroactively?
Well, that's, having known one of them that's on the list, Parker, is one of the big things that he wants. He's not fighting for, like, he knew some of the risks, but what he wants is that, you know, the argument is going with the insurance and stuff, is that they're saying his injuries aren't hockey-related. And he's like, you got to be kidding me, right? Mm-hmm. Even just the elbow that he took and the puck in the eye that pushed his eye back and bruised his brain, like, they're totally hockey related. And he has to fight his insurance all the time to say that it's not, right? Because they're saying it's not. So, I mean, it's always tough with lawsuits, you know, because some people, I don't know all the inner workings with Parker, and we didn't get into that with him. It wasn't something that his lawyer wanted to talk about. But, you know, with the lawsuit, it's tough because I think all sports are kind of learning this now, which we talk about in the film. You know, we just didn't know all the evidence. Even the concussion specialist we interviewed, Dr. Charles Tater, he's like, when I started in neurology, we didn't even call a concussion a brain injury. It wasn't classified as that. He's like, now it is. So, you know, everybody, why people are joining the lawsuit, I think everybody's got their own personal reasons. I don't know all of them, but I know for some of the guys, it's just that now they're fighting with insurance because insurance is saying, well, these aren't hockey-related injuries when they are, clearly.
How crucial was it for you to have someone like Dr. Charles Tater involved in this documentary?
Well, we had to. We had to, like, portray, you know, we had to get all sides, right? And we had to get the science and stuff behind it. Otherwise, you know, a good doc, if you don't have that stuff, you're going to just, they're going to punch holes in you. So we, like, we, and that was the other thing that was really shocking to us is a lot of the concussion doctors didn't want to interview. We're like, really? Don't you want to get the stats and information out there? We had three or four of them deny they didn't want to do interviews. And then we're like, really? And thankfully, Dr. Charles Tater came on, and I think he's great in the film and brings some great perspective. It makes people look at kind of what we discuss in the film and kind of even, Jeff, I don't know how long you're there for the Q&A, but the elephant in the room, we're the elephant in the room. Like, only 5% of concussions are coming from fighting. But if you were a general observer of hockey or just an avid fan or outside fan, you would think with all the media attention on fighting, you'd be like, oh, man, fighting's got to cost 40 to 50, 60%. So to find out it's less than 10%, you're like, wow, really? We should be putting a lot more media attention on the elephant in the room, which is the speed of the game and the equipment.
The problem with that, too, though, is, you know, the toothpaste isn't going back in the tube. Like, that's it. Like, that's the speed of the game right now. And the, one of the clips he used in mine yesterday, I was referring to this one doctor that I was talking to about concussions, and that's Dr. Allie Rendley, who's been to a couple of our Puck Talks as well. She's her and her sister listen to this podcast. And she worked with Dr. Charles Tater in the summer during brain surgery as well. And her point to me has always been, and this is one of the things that I said last night, was her point has always been, you know, you hockey guys are so fixated on the head and shots to the head and punches to the head and shoulders and elbows to the head. Like, we know that's not good, but that's not the only thing that produces concussions. She says the problem with hockey is hockey.
Yeah.
That's what you guys can't get your heads around.
No, and that's, and Jeff, you crushed that part, like, because it's great to have the doctors, because Charles, we followed up with Tater, I mean, you've seen the film, but for your host there, but that was the big thing. As us, as filmmakers, I had no idea about that. That was fascinating, where he's like, hey, he's like, we have a lot of guys that just hit chest to chest or shoulder to shoulder, and their head bobbles, and that causes a concussion, right? So, and it's kind of, you know, as was alluded to, we don't really say it in the film, but they kind of talked about it afterwards, is that the enforcer's just been the scapegoat for that. Let's point everything at them right now as the problem of concussions, but they're not, right? Like, even some of the guys came up to me, Jeff, that had no idea about that stat. Like, Konopka and them were like, man, I thought, like, fighting caused 40% of concussions in hockey. I didn't know it was that low, right? Like, even they were like, I with everything I'm reading in the media, I would have thought it was way higher, too.
And so, what's amazing about it is that, you know, the guy who's put that number out there more than anybody is Gary Bettman. But because it's because of who the messenger is, it never resonates.
Well, and plus, as, you know, we discover when you go on the film, it doesn't matter. There's going to be people, too, that just don't want to hear it, right? So even if it wasn't Bettman, they're just not going to want to hear it because, you know, often when we'd interview streeters and stuff, there'd be a lot of street interviews that would be like, I love a good hit, but I don't love the fighting stuff. And then it'd be interesting to tell them, be like, well, did you know that actually most players are far more scared of a big open ice hit than they are of a willing combatant that they get to agree to drop the gloves with? And when they put it that way, they're like, I never thought about that. Like, Wendell Clark said it in the interview, it didn't make the film, but he talks about how he's like, at least when I fought, it's me and another grown adult making a decision, like, we're going to drop the gloves, and I have a fighting chance. He's like, but if I'm coming up ice and I look to the left and you plow me with a clean hit, not dirty, but shoulder to chest, and you concuss me and knock me out for the season, I didn't agree to that. He's like, at least with the fight, I had the option to agree to it.
That was always Brendan Shanahan's differentiation too when he was head of player safety. It was like, this is why we go after headshots, but we don't go after fighting, is because one is a voluntary, you know, mano a mano thing, and the other one's a cheap shot while a guy's not looking. Fighting, you know, it's no secret fighting is down into historically low levels in the National Hockey League, and I'm sure in probably other leagues as well in North America. Do you ever see this thing boomeranging back, or do you think that the enforcer fighting as a whole, that you're kind of chronicling something that is a certain time period in hockey that we're never going to see again?
It's so hard to say. You know, at some point, I think maybe it might come back. Like, after you saw the preliminary game between Canada and North America, or USA and Canada, where it got pretty frisky. And I don't know. I think just the way, if you look at the trend of all sports and kind of where we're going, I would think it's probably being phased out. And that's why ice guarding seems to be that perfect piece to honor, you know, this part of hockey history and the guys that did it and brought people to the game. But you never know. I mean, maybe now, you know, if media gets out there and now we're looking at fightings at a historic low, but concussions are not, maybe they'll start looking at things differently. Be interesting to see how it goes in the next 5 years. I even after doing the doc, I don't really know which way it's going to go. I mean, the writing's kind of on the wall. There's very few guys, very few pure enforcers left. Mm-hmm. Only two or three of them hanging around the league. But, you know, you see a guy like Milan Lucic this summer that was one of the most sought-after free agents because he's a great winger and he brings that physical element along with fighting and intimidation. And it was still very valued by dozens of teams in the NHL or a dozen teams. So still looks like teams want it. And as we know, the NHL is a copycat league. So if a team wins with toughness, then lots of other teams will try to duplicate.
You know, so many interesting takeaways. Driving home last night from the theater, driving home with my wife, and we're talking about the doc, and we talked a lot about fear and this element. And I've always believed one thing, that a fight itself, Adam, isn't as important to a game as the threat of a fight. The threat of a fight can regulate, unlike a fight actually can. Like, just when that threat of a fight hovers over a situation, it can kind of regulate. We see it all the time.
No, you're,
but
Jeff, you're right on the money. And this McClellan brought this up last night when he said, listen, he's like, compare it to when you see a cop car on the side of the road, what do? You start driving, make sure you got the speed limit, your seatbelt's on, you start keeping everything in line to make sure you don't get pulled over. Right? And he said it was the same when we played hockey. Like, if that guy was out there knowing that it could happen, that you could play a little too physical and now you're going to have to answer the bell, that you're like, yeah, maybe I won't try to take the extra two steps when I body check him. And Mirzy was there last night, who played with Scott Parker and a few others, and he came running up to me with his kids after, and he was like, oh my God. I'm like, thank you. Thank you. You told the story correctly. You and your team did an amazing job. And he told me a great story where he said, look, I was trying to break into the league and I'm trying to get noticed and get a regular position on the team. So I was playing against Peter Forsberg and clean hit, but I rocked him, right? And I was like, I rocked Forsberg and blah, blah, blah. He's like, and I turned around and Chris Simon stuck his stick underneath my chin and held me there. And he says, if you ever do that again, can we swear on here? Is this a
go for it.
Yeah, go ahead.
He says, if you ever do that again, I will fucking kill you, right? And he's like, and then that's it, and skated away. He's like, and guess what? I didn't hit Forsberg for the rest of my career. I played him properly and tried to, like, hook, but I never hit him like that again. So when you talk about the threat of a fight can reduce things, Muir said, it did for me. I never ran Peter Forsberg the rest of my career from that one moment with Chris Simon, and I didn't even throw a punch.
And what's funny is that you hear stories like that, and you hear coaches and players say a fight changed the trajectory of a game, and because it can't easily be quantified, I feel like it gets sort of tossed aside, and that's always been a real problem for me.
Greg, sometimes it does, and sometimes it doesn't. Like, not every power play is effective, not every penalty kill is effective.
But the idea that it can't be used as a tactic or hasn't been used effectively as a tactic in an 82-game season, it's like the idea that it's all superfluous has always been a problem.
Well, and here's and Adam, I'll go one further on this idea of fear as well. This was the one takeaway that I got, you know, driving home last night and talked to my wife about it. This idea of fear and the idea that the enforcer on a hockey team, traditionally in that role, in that era, you know, evoke this sense of fear from the other team. You were scared when you played Detroit because they had Probert and Koser, right? Like you were, oh man, Scott Parker, Colorado, I am, St. Louis is a murderer's row of Chase and Twist and Todd Ewan and like all the, they had like a murderer's row of, like everyone had these guys. And the idea was that they would elicit fear from the other team. But what I find so much, and your doc touched on this yesterday with a lot of the guys, and from the players that I know that filled that role, fear is felt by the guys that fight themselves in a lot of ways more than the people they're supposed to, you know, they're supposed to incite fear from. Like if you talk to any, like there are very few guys, Adam, as you well know, that love everything about fighting. You know, Tony Twist may be the only guy that I've ever met who loved everything about it.
And Brian Graham, the two, those are the two.
Right. But very few guys love everything. They don't love, you know, thinking about like circling the calendar. Oh shit, this guy. And the sleepless nights and all like that type of fear, not being and being cranky around your family and that type of fear that you internalize. That to me is one of the weird things through this entire enforcer phenomenon. You are supposed to make the other team afraid, yet at the same time, you may be more terrified of the fight than anyone you're about to fight.
No, and that's a great point. And I remember one of the things learning from the guys, because even me, like I admit, I liked it. I loved seeing when two heavyweights lined up and you'd see it going, but you kind of be like, what's the point of that? But something Parker brought up, and he's like, well, you don't understand the point of that? He's like, well, I'll tell you a game example where that happened. He's like, I don't want to outname the guy because it's my team and we want a cup together, but we had a guy in our team playing like a little shit. He was headhunting, elbows high, playing just on the edge of that physical game. He was trying to help our team, but he was playing on the edge of hurting people, right? And literally, Brashear came up to Parker and said, if that little shit plays like that all night, you're going to pay the consequences for that. And Parker went to his own teammate and said, calm the fuck down, because I don't feel like fighting Brash tonight. And the guy said, whoa, Parks, I'm just trying to get the... He's like, I know. You're trying to be physical. You're trying to get the game going. Stay within the means. Don't play dirty, because I don't want to fight Brashear. Again, it's another thing that you can't see the stats on that, but I was like, wow. All Brashear had to do was talk to Parks, and he didn't want to go that night for whatever reason or didn't feel like it, and Parks calmed his own team down and said, you need to stop playing, you know, on that edge of where you can hurt someone.
It's awesome stuff. Wanted to ask you about a project that, according to IMDb, you're working on. You go from one type of fearless to another type of fearless. You're doing a Robbie Knievel documentary?
Awesome.
Yeah, that's in post right now. There's been lots done on Evel Knievel, but nothing done on Robbie chasing his father's legacy. So that's hence the title called Chasing Evel. Evel spelled like their name, E-V-E-L. That he just constantly chasing his father's legacy. He's broke 21 world records. And, you know, the saying amongst the daredevils is that Evel broke bones and Robbie broke records, yet, you know, 8 out of 10 people don't know who Robbie is. They know who Evel is.
He's a fascinating cat, and like you turn. It's one of those deals where you like flip the channel one night, and then all of a sudden you see people setting up for a stunt or something, and it would be like Robbie Knievel, and you say to yourself, "Wow, you know, here he is. He picked up the mantle.
He's still doing it. He's 55. He just did it. We thought was his last jump, and he's he's hit that landing ramp, because in order to do the jumps they do, and we talk about this in the film where it's kind of losing its hurrah, is that he does just straight jumps, right? Like, he doesn't do the flips and everything. That evolved much later, right? That was kind of when he was hitting his peak, the X Games and stuff started to come in. But the straight jump still has its, like, many, many dangers, because you're hitting this narrow ramp. You have to hit it at 80 miles an hour, and you're hitting the landing ramp at 80 miles an hour. So his body is... You know, plus he didn't look after himself the best. He partied and got into drugs and everything else. But so his back, when he hit the last landing ramp, he crushed it. He fused his spine. They had to fuse his spine because he crushed his back. He landed, but hitting that landing ramp at 53 years old, and he concussed himself, right? And it was funny because I just interviewed Dr. Charles Tater, and everybody's like, how did he get a concussion? I didn't see his head hit the handlebars. And we're like, you don't have to. When you hit a landing ramp at 80 miles an hour and your head snaps like a Pez dispenser, that'll give you a concussion. So, but he knows nothing else. He's been jumping since he was 8 years old, opening for his dad. So he doesn't know how to, he can't even live in a house. When we travel with him, he sleeps in his motorhome. Even if you get him a hotel, he'll go wash in the hotel and then he sleeps in his motorhome. Can't stay in a place because he's been traveling on the road with his dad since he was 8 years old.
It's outstanding. I can't wait to see that one as well. Adam, again, a home run with Guardians. I was happy to be part of it. Happy to be at the premiere last night as well. You're taking this thing out west. I think you have Edmonton, Calgary, Vancouver, Seattle. Am I right about that?
Yeah. Well, no. I've got Edmonton in 2 days, and then we've got Kelowna on the 29th. I always go back to my hometown. Yeah. And then it's going to be a world broadcast premiere on Super Channel October 8th. And then right now we're in negotiations. We've got interest from several buyers. So, like, we got Showtime circling and obviously Netflix, but eventually it'll go. We've got a U.S. release happening. We're working on dates, and then it's going to go back to theaters in January here in Canada, and then eventually all platforms, iTunes, Vimeo, Netflix, all those goodies.
That's awesome. Well, best of luck with it. It's an outstanding piece, and I think it's something that and again, the nice thing about it is it's not one of those, are you for fighting or are you against fighting? It's one of those, these are things that happened with these people, and this is that slice of their lives. As told by them. So, well done. I know it's a hard thing to capture, and you did a fantastic job. And by the way, I'm not going to spoil it for anybody, but the closing scene, I don't know whether I was ready to cry or ready to laugh at that closing scene.
I know. It's a powerful, powerful scene. And it's great that that story got brought up of how hard we had to fight to keep that.
Yeah. Don't spoil it.
Brett Harvey said,
no spoilers.
Said some things are worth getting knocked out for.
Yeah, you'll know what we're talking about when you see it. Excellent work, Adam, and thanks for taking time on the podcast today.
My pleasure. Thanks, Jeff. Thank you, guys. And, Jeff, thank you for everything. Coming to the premiere, being a part of it, I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
That was great. It was the pleasure was all mine. Thanks, Adam. Adam Scurgi is the producer of Ice Guardians. Hopefully
awesome.
You get a chance to see this thing sooner than later. Yeah, I think you'll really dig
cool.
it, Wish. I think you'll
I'll definitely dig it. A couple things before we wrap it up. One thing, according to, and this has been reported in a few places, but according to the Las Vegas Review-Journal.
Vegas?
Vegas.
Not Las Vegas?
It is gonna be the Las Vegas Blank Knights with Bill Foley saying that the name is set. He can't tell you exactly what it is, it's a secret, but he definitely is gonna go with Knights and then something modifying Knights. So Golden, Silver, or Desert apparently are the three choices according to Steve Karp of the Las Vegas Review Journal.
Do you like that all this tiny little drips of information have come out about the name, like every couple of days?
Yeah, and like the, that's, well, there's part of that is genius internet snooping to find out what is registered.
I appreciate the ambition on that, and I appreciate the anthropology and what people are doing to find out what the name is.
I can't imagine it's not going to be Silver Knights. That's a great, that's a cool-ass name. And it's also, Nevada's the Silver State. Like, it makes too much sense.
Oh, is it? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it is. So, what, you like golden? You don't like desert, do you?
I like dark.
What?
I like dark.
Dark Knights. and then a few little bits here of listener mail. Bradford wants to know, how competitive do you expect the Winnipeg Jets to be this year? Playoff bound, better winning percentage than the New York Jets. Before the Cincinnati game, I might have said no way, but I don't know about the Jets anymore. It's going to be, you might see a grown man cry on Thursday night at the live podcast if the Jets are losing to the Bills.
Here's the interesting thing about the Winnipeg Jets. And listen, their left side is going to be a lot of fun to watch. Whether it's Nick Ehlers or whether it's Patrick Laine, whether it's Kyle Connor, I think it's going to be a pretty fun team to watch, on that side. What happens with Jacob Trouba?
I don't know. Good question.
That's a fascinating one.
There's one more thing I have to check on the Winnipeg Jets here. Let's see.
What's that?
Yep. Yep. Still in the Western Conference. They're fucked.
Expect a big step forward from Mark Scheifele. Now Blake Wheeler's got a new initial on his jersey.
I was just talking about this with somebody here during the World Cup stuff here in D.C. about like how it sucks that Calgary and Edmonton and Winnipeg, you know, all these teams can make these giant leaps forward as far as like having young players and trying to transition to becoming contenders. But then, you know, there's six spots there. Three California teams, Chicago and Nashville in perpetuity. And then St. Louis at least for one more year.
I can see St. Louis taking a step back before taking a big step forward next year.
Yeah,
can you?
Could. It all depends. I mean, like, Hitch is a pretty special coach.
Yep.
Not saying Mike Yeo can't be one, but at this point he isn't.
But we just don't know what Colton Parayko is going to be like in season number two.
Uh-huh. And Minnesota. Because it's not as if Minnesota is going to miss the playoffs now. But you got a guy who only does
Bruce.
Is bring teams to the playoffs. They don't do anything when they get there, but they get there.
Seven-game audit. So he's lost like seven game sevens.
Pat Clark wants to know, whose Toronto Roadrunners wallet did the money for the Chuck a Puck originate, father or son?
Hey, yeah, that was my... Oh, actually, no. I can't recall, actually.
Last thing I wanted to mention is about Chuck a Puck. I forgot to say it before. So the time I did it at the Lehigh Valley Phantoms game.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when you did it the other night,
yeah.
It was trying to get the puck in the circle? Or were you trying to shoot it like a garbage can?
Center ice dot. Whoever's closest.
That's usually how it's done. I've also seen it people throwing it into garbage cans. When I did it at the Lehigh Valley game, you were throwing pucks into four strategically placed toilet bowls because the entire thing was sponsored by a plumber.
Oh, that's brilliant.
So after the game. They wheeled out four toilet bowls.
Yeah, they did Chuck a Puck after the game, not in an intermission
feature?
After the game. Really?
After the game, yep. After the game, they wheeled out four toilet bowls.
Yeah.
So, you know, you had one side of the ice, the other side of the ice. Ruby ran to the bathroom at the end of the game, fully expecting that there'd be, like, you know, a good 10 minutes before we all started throwing pucks. But it was literally the last player's skates left the ice, and then it was like, it's time for Chuck a Puck. And, like, everybody threw their pucks at the toilet bowls. Most of them missed.
But you threw them from the stands. You didn't
from
go
the stands.
On the ice.
Right.
Okay. Then, yeah.
And this poor girl comes out of the bathroom. She looks down. The ice is covered in toilet bowls and pucks, and she didn't get a chance to throw one. Felt so bad for her.
Oh, did she have a puck that she was going to throw?
Yeah, I threw it for her.
Oh. You see, I like the idea of trying to get it to the pin.
You only had a certain amount of time to throw it. You only had, like, 2 minutes to throw it. So she didn't make it back in time to throw it. So I threw it on her behalf.
See, I like it
poorly.
We have to throw it to center ice because then it almost becomes like curling, and you have to have draw weight perfectly right to the button.
Mm-hmm. I don't know what any of that means.
Okay.
Is that like bowling?
It's fun. Have I asked this question? Do Americans look at at curling the same way Canadians look at bowling? Like, why the hell are you guys so excited about this sport?
I know. I think we'd understand it better if it was more widespread. I know that there are certain pockets of the country that have it.
Where's curling big in the States? The default is Northeast.
Minnesota.
Okay. It's big in Minnesota?
No. Yeah, the prairie. Upper prairie.
All right.
Closer to Alberta, places like that.
Okay. Curling.
What'd you think? Like they were going out in Tuscaloosa, Alabama to go curling?
No, I was thinking like Northeast, because whenever you hear, oh yeah, hockey's popular in the States, well, the Northeast. It's always a default, right?
Yeah. That's as much ice as we can afford to give a sport. Get any more left.
We lost the recipe elsewhere.
Yep. All right, listen. Once again, once more with Phelan.
Do it.
Thursday night, September 15th, 918 Bathurst. That's 918 Bathurst Street in Toronto, Ontario.
Yeah.
Me, Merrick, live podcast, Steve Dangle, Andy Petrello, so on and so forth. Come on and join us.
Run down the list. Carly Agro will be there. Kristen Shilton from TSN will be there. Tom Peraska, you know him as General Fanager. Joe Packer, friend from Sportsnet. Ken Reed will be aboard as well. Joshua Cloak from Vice Sports. Kevin Funk, director of Hello Destroyer, will be aboard as well. Vesa Rantanen, Magnus Nystrom will be there.
I love the idea of Fanager doing a panel, and it's just like a thousand people lined up to be like, What if my team decided to buy out Travis Zajac? What would be the cap penalty? Thanks.
No, you know what you should do with Tom? You should have people call up. They'll be there live. Just hand out the microphone. People propose trades, and Tom will tell you why it can't work from a cap management point of view.
Right.
Just be the ultimate rally killer. Just destroying you on sports radio.
Here's why
it can't work.
Only if at the end of his summation, he does the EA Sports trade denied or trade accepted. That's the only way he can do it. But join us. It's going to be a really fun time. I'm flying in that morning going to Media Day, and then I'm going to the show at night. So I will be straight up punchy due to lack of sleep. So it should be a fun one.
Are we getting together for dinner? What are you doing? What time are you all done media commits?
I'll figure it out. I'll let you know. I mean, it's media day, whatever. So I'll probably wrap up around like 3 or 4.
Oh,
we'll figure it out.
Let's go to dinner, man. I need someone to pay.
You got it. Thanks to Adam Scorgi. The film is Ice Guardians. It's making its way through Canada. And then also keep an eye out for that Robbie Knievel joint. And that's it. Thanks everybody for listening. And we'll see you on Thursday.
9:18 Bowers.
That's your official marching orders. Get your ass to the live podcast. It's super fun. Anyone who's been there to one can tell you that. And that's it. So thanks everybody. Thanks to producer Sam. And we'll see you on Thursday. Bye. Thank you.